Is it a Venice?
Excuse me?
Oh, sorry, I thought you wanted to say something.
Don't put words in his mouth.
Is it a Venice?
I propose honorable Ransom.
Okay. Is there a second?
Yeah.
Likely?
A second.
That's too likely.
Yeah.
I was going to propose Mr. Blighty. Can I have a counter proposal? I'm just easy music.
You don't make up a new name.
Good morning, honorable members, and good morning, people from the Film and Publication Board, and also the officials. I'm opening the meeting officially, and also apologize for us for arriving late in the meeting. We were held up somewhere. It's not that we undermine your presence. Let me welcome you in this select committee. We are a select committee on social services. And we have got this, the apology of the chairperson. I think, I'm not sure, we met for the first time with the board, film board. So you are unfortunate because you met us for the first time and you don't have the whole complement of the committee. But nevertheless, we will continue next time when we meet. We will make sure that you come at the right time. And we invite you at the right time when all members are here. This quarter is a very hectic quarter to us, especially in the NCOP. There are a lot of things, a lot of activities within the house. So the time is very limited for us. And we welcome to the select committee. Do we have any apologies?
Yes.
Oh, our apologies are from Honorable Khasmeni, the chairperson, who is with the Magistrates Commission session, and also Honorable Muroto, the whip of the committee, is also not there. She is also attending the JSC session, and Honorable Mashamaite, they are in the same session. And Honorable Makhate are being delayed, is delayed. Maybe she will join us later. That's the only apologies that I have in front of me. In our agenda, our first agenda item is the briefing by the Film and Publication Board on issues relating to child pornography and curbing thereof. We are having, before that, because we meet for the first time, I think we need to introduce ourselves. I'm Zukiswa Ranto from Eastern Cape. I'm representing the Eastern Cape in the NCOP. I'm a provincial whip and a member of the select committee. Honorable members.
Member Mube, representing Gauteng province at the National Council.
Morning, everybody. My name is Sipho Plaki. I'm representing the Northwest Province in the Council of Provinces.
Good morning, my name is Willem Faber and I represent the Northern Cape Province. Good morning, my name is Michael Davalis. I am representing the Western Cape province.
Good
morning, I'm a researcher for the Select Committee on Social Services.
Good morning, my name is Mbuli Molo. I'm a researcher for this committee.
And I'm Chulisile Ganyaza Twalo, the content advisor for the committee.
Good
morning,
Masao Williams,
the committee secretary of the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Erasmus, from committee
secretary. I think it's over to you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Yolisa Makasi. I'm the chief executive officer of the Film and Publication Board, and I'm with my two colleagues. They will introduce themselves.
Good morning, Chair and the committee members. My name is Mabula Magula, Chief Operations Officer, Film and Publication Board.
Good morning, I'm Clive Bowman, also from the Film and Publication Board based in Cape Town.
Thank you. The other people that are with us are from the communication, the media?
No,
not oh, okay.
Morning, members and guests. My name is Christopher and I'm from 7it.
Jazzy from
PMG. Okay, we will give over to the film publication board to give us a presentation.
Thank you, Chair. The presentation is mainly divided between me and the Chief Operations Officer. So I'll just take you through level the mandate of the Film and Publication Board. And then I'll hand over to the Chief Executive Officer who will, to the Chief Operations Officer who will take you into the detail. When we were invited to present to the committee, we were requested to brief the committee about the campaign that we are working on, which is the campaign against child pornography. And we took liberty to bring you a report which is being circulated, a report that we have compiled concerning the campaign in the previous financial year as part of our reporting, the work that we have done on the campaign. I've been asked by the chairperson of the board, who is the outgoing deputy chairperson of the IEC, to apologize on her behalf, Mrs. Togompumlwana, who could not be with us today, I think because of the wrap-up work they are doing at the IEC. So she did ask us to apologize and indicate that next time she'll certainly be part of the meeting when we get invited again. Just briefly, our mandate as the Film and Publication Board is derived from the Film and Publications Act 65 of 1996, which has been amended twice in 2004 and 2009.
Sorry, Ms. Yolis Makas. I just want to indicate one important issue, ne? Just for in future. I don't want you to be trapped in the same situation the other people are trapped in. When you are invited, if you have got a presentation, we expect that presentation to reach us in good time, 7 days before we get the presentation, so that we can interact with the presentation and have more questions questions that we need to have. Because if you don't do that next time, we will leave this for now. But if we don't do that the next time, you will be going back to your offices without giving us the presentation. So I just wanted to highlight that. Okay. For in future. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I want to apologize for that. I had hoped though that the committee people will brief the chair regarding the issue, because we only realized yesterday that maybe there was a gremlin with the emailing, because for the past week we've been trying to email the presentation and we only got a feedback from the Deputy Minister's office yesterday that the presentation was not received, and then we said fine, we'll do a plan B and bring copies today. From our part we did try and we apologize for that, Chairperson. I just want to switch this off, sorry, Chair. Then, as I was indicating earlier on, that the mandate of the Film and Publication Board is really around regulating the media and entertainment environment which we're working in South Africa, with a focus particularly on creation, production and distribution of films, games and certain publications. So the first issue that we do, we regulate that space for films, publications and games. And how we do this is really through for any films that are being introduced in the country, whether they're local or international, if they're going to your movie houses like Stekin Echo or NU Metro, which are mostly the two main players in the industry, or if they are going into home entertainment, which is DVDs or videos, they would first come to the Film and Publication Board for classification. We have people who are employed on a part-time basis through a public nomination process who sit and watch the movies and classify them and give them an age rating as well as a consumer information on the basis informed by the legislation together with the classification guidelines that we develop and update on a yearly basis. The second aspect really that we look at is the protection of children from exposure to harmful and inappropriate content, and I think this is the core of why we're here today, because we with the rise and the developments in new technology and new media, I think there's a lot of issues around exposure of children. I mean, we've been reading so many stories of late about the Facebook rapist or Facebook killer, whatever the story is. This guy meets people on Facebook and makes appointments with them and rapes them and kills them. I think one of the girls, when we read the story, was lucky in that she managed to escape and raise the alarm on the issue. So we run a campaign working with partners around raising awareness on the cyber safety of young people, because it's a big, big issue currently. And I think the third issue is really about punishing the use of children in pornography. This includes their exposure. Child pornography is illegal in the country in terms of our legislation. So if in our way we bump into any reports or any information or any films that contain suspicious child pornography content, we work with law enforcement officers in order to ensure that we take that information out of circuit, and there are investigations that are done regarding that. We are a public entity which operates, I think, in the current financial year on a budget of 65 million, which reports to the Department of Home Affairs. People always ask us why we're under the Department of Home Affairs. I think historically the Film and Publication Board was a censorship board which got transformed into the a classification authority. So in the past it was more concerned about censorship than classification. And the difference really between censorship and classification in our own understanding is that we don't interfere with the content. You bring the content to us as a distributor, then we will advise you that this content is not appropriate for this age group, is appropriate for this age group. But we'll never say to you, take out this piece of the content because it's not allowed in South Africa. The only content that is illegal that has to be reported to the police is is child pornography, because it's outlawed. There's an issue about distributing bestiality. Bestiality is not allowed for distribution in South Africa, but for those people who are simply possessing it, possession is allowed in terms of legislation. I think some of the classification elements that we're looking at when we do our classification, you would see when you go maybe to Stekin Echo and to watch a movie, maybe you are taking your kids, you will see the poster should have a triangle that looks like our logo that gives you the consumer information. Sometimes you would see that it says TBA. When it says TBA, it says the age rating. I mean, that information will be announced. The movie houses are not supposed to play a movie that has a TBA sticker. By the time it's showing, it must show the consumer information. We have picked up in our compliance monitoring that sometimes they do take chances, but we have compliance monitors who go around to the shops, to the movie houses, to check whether they do comply. When they don't comply, we have a system of working with them and ensuring that they comply in future. So if members were to walk and people who are around this meeting were to walk and go to a movie and pick up something, we will give the number at the end where you can alert us about the information so that we can follow up, because sometimes we struggle to be everywhere all the time. some of the classification elements that we look at is language, which basically involves it's a warning about swear words, profanity, abuse, or aggressive language usage. Then there's violence, which indicates scenes of brutality, physical abuse, torture, and other forms of harm to people. Prejudice, which is informed by gender, religious, and race issues that are explored in the film. I must indicate that we have struggled a lot with the issue of prejudice because I think it's a very moving subject in a way. You can't really point a finger at something and say it's prejudice. So the context is very important when classifiers. I know that most of the films that we have classified and given an advice which is prejudice related, that we always get appeals regarding those issues. I think because of the nature of our history as a society and the whole exploring the whole subject of prejudice, then there's the issue of nudity and then there's the issue of sex. I think these are quite clear. Nudity basically has to do with naked people exposed in certain parts of their body, which are private parts, as well as sex, which is the physical act of having sex in the film. These are mainly the key classification classifiable elements that we look at, and there's a range of age that we work with. We have films that would appeal to all, would require parental guidance, would require those who are 10 years and above but matured. So the parent plays a role because as a parent you know the maturity levels of your child. So this is just to advise the parent who has to take responsibility, because the parent pays for the ticket of the child to go to the movie. The parent pays for the phone that the child has. Then there's 10 age, 10 and above, 13 and above, 16 and above, 18 and above. You'll pick up that mostly 16 and 18 and above would be your films mainly that contain violence, sex, nudity, all these things combined together. Then we have I'm not going to go into the next slide. The CEO will talk into it in detail, but we have I've indicated earlier on that one of our biggest challenges currently as a society, it's more your new media than your. I think it's easy to monitor whether Stekineko or NU Metro are complying with the laws, because you can physically walk to Stekineko. Mm-hmm. We have people in provinces who, as part of their schedule, know, like Clive is based in the Western Cape, they know as part of their schedule they will have to go to Waterfront to check compliance by shops and here and there. The biggest challenge is hawkers on the street. Hawkers on the street that they sell unclassified material. It's illegal, it's unclassified. Even if we wanted to classify it, we can't classify it because it's mainly pirated material and it's against the law. And the job of getting that material out of the streets is the job of the police. But we work with the police sometimes in trying to get out of the street. But we find in many occasions that our efforts together with the police are not taking us anywhere, because you go now, you raid the streets with the police, you go to Belleville now, you raid the street with the police, you take the unclassified content, in an hour's time it's back. Their production times are very quick. In an hour's time that material is back there, and we know that people still buy the stuff. I don't know how many households would you get into and find people playing DVDs that are bought in the street. So it's a booming industry, it's a booming market. I don't think we are as effective in that one as we should be, because we really rely on law enforcement. We are not police ourselves, but we work with the police to remove the material from the streets. I know that last year we seized about more than 250,000 illegal contents from the streets. Illegal in our terms means things that are unclassified. They may be pirated, but our law, our act does not necessarily require us to remove pirated materials from the streets. It requires us to move unclassified material, but there's a relationship between unclassified and pirated material. So we work a lot with people who work within that set of pirated materials. So we basically, I think it's the biggest challenge. The hawkers are the biggest challenge. And if you look at the system that we use, we have a system where we will visit you three times, we'll advise you, we'll give you 3 months to clean up, to submit, to classify. Most of the people that you work with, especially those who are selling from the street, or your small, emerging one-person kind of business, end up closing. which affects the, I guess, the sustainability of their households and other things, because then they would say, I'd rather close than have to live with the requirements of the poly, of the legislation of Film and Publication Board, requirements of the municipality, I'd rather close the business. So in a way, it's a concern that it affects social cohesion of families and sustainability for those who are trying to survive to provide for their families. We have taken this matter back to our board, and one of the things that we are motivating for is that let's have lesser fees for people for this kind of people. But again, it's a catch-22 situation, because if you have lesser fees for them, let's assume they will classify and do everything. The challenge again is that they will still be submitting pirated materials. And once you give them your certificate, you say you have classified, it's almost like you are endorsing a pirated product that's on the street. And in terms of South African laws, we should not be doing that. Because even though it's not our responsibility to look at pirated material, but we're working within the sector, we're working within the state and the other laws within the state, and piracy is not allowed. I think the last issue about children and technology is that the internet, the cell phones have brought so much exposure of children to the internet. And the cell phone is the easiest way. I mean, your BlackBerries and iPhones are the easiest way of accessing this information, your smartphones. And our research shows us that kids, either from rural or urban areas, they have access to these cell phones because the parents buy them the cell phones. And it's for a number of reasons. But the gap we pick up is that the parents buy the most sophisticated cell phones, but they don't know how to use the cell phones themselves. So it's difficult for you as a parent to monitor your child's use of a cell phone that you can't even operate yourself. And the smartphones are so complicated. I own a BlackBerry, but I don't know many functions of the BlackBerry itself. If I were to buy my child a BlackBerry, I'm sure he would hide so much information in the BlackBerry that I would not be able to access, because I don't know that kind of information. And we know that children are under pressure from their peers. And this weekend, this Sunday, I hosted some kids who are my friend's kids, two twins who are 13-year-old and a 10-year-old one. And I listened to them. They are studying in a Chinese school in Pretoria. And I listened to them complaining about how they don't have a cell phone, how they don't have a BlackBerry and iPhone, and every child in the class and their friends have these phones, and they feel so left out. So I asked them, what are you going to do with your BlackBerry? No, we're going to chat on BBM with our friends, because all our friends are on BBM. So it's just that pressure that kids are subject. Of course, their parents are firm to say, you're still young to have this kind of phones, we're not going to buy you a phone. But the pressure that the kids find themselves in, so if they're creative enough, they would even use other means to have access to these cell phones. What we have basically done as an approach is really to go big on outreach and talking to learners and talking to parents about this issue. Of course, our legislation to some extent allows us to engage with industry to ensure that there is some moderation and supervision that's happening on the chat networks. But we know that in reality, it is difficult for this to happen. But I think having said what I've said, I'm just going to invite the COO just to take you through to some of the initiatives that we have done regarding this. Over to you, COO.
Thank you, CEO. I'm going to just show you a short clip before I go into the presentation, just on the mandate of the FPB.
Never look back. Would you cry?
Elaborated in detail on the mandate of the Film and Publications Board. But this presentation is going to focus mainly on the protection of children from exposure to harmful and inappropriate content and the punishment of those who use children in pornography. We won't focus as much on the classification mandate for this committee. But we are saying that South Africa as a country has approximately 12 million children, and the majority of...
I was asking if you could put that on slide.
Oh, sorry. Thank you.
Thank you.
The majority of the parents today are very busy parents, and most homes are single parent homes or child-headed homes. So there's no longer, as a society, we no longer have a lot of parents who are both available and can take care of children properly. So to add to that, we find that children are increasingly having access to internet and technology because of the computers that are available, access to cell phones, and this use of internet is unmonitored because parents are busy and or they are not available or they've passed away. So children don't have anybody to give them guidance on how they can use this technology that is meant to be for their benefit. So as a result, there's increased exploitation of children on the internet in particular, and that's why you will see that our presentation focuses on exposure of children to inappropriate content on the internet. Because we are saying, yes, children are exposed to inappropriate content in all other areas, but the biggest problem right now is the internet more than anything else. And we did a research last year in partnership with UNISA, and we found that more than 50% of young people today own cell phones and smartphones for that matter. So that means they can access the internet on these phones. So you can no longer say, I've cut out the TV, it's in the living room, and then the child is safe in their own bedroom, because they have these cell phones 24 hours with them. They visit the world when they are just sitting in their own homes. They are chatting to everybody across the globe. So as parents, there is an increased challenge of how do we ensure that children remain safe despite meeting all these strangers, because in essence they are meeting strangers. They are just not meeting them physically, but they are meeting them on the internet. And sometimes they are so vulnerable that they actually go on to meet with these strangers physically, having met them, and they feel like they know them because they interact with them on a daily basis on these social networks. So there's daily internet. Our research revealed that there's daily internet access by young children through cell phones. And what they mainly do when they are on the internet, they access information, they post information about themselves, about their friends, they download content, they play games, and this access is mostly when they are at home or at school. Now, we are not too much worried about the school, because in the school environment, there's a teacher, there's filtering systems. We are worried about the home, because they get home when the parent is not yet home. Maybe she's still at work or he's still at work, or even when the parent is there, the parent is so busy with many other things that they don't actually get time to monitor on a regular basis what children are doing. Parents mostly monitor how much children have used on their cell phone. They don't monitor what have they been doing on the cell phone, which sites are they visiting, who are they talking to. Many parents don't monitor that. So the children use prepaid contracts mostly, and they use it mostly when they're at home, because many schools have regulations that says you can't use a cell phone. So we are not too much concerned about the school environment. We are concerned about when they are out of the school environment and they are having this gadget that is with them 24/7. They make calls, they send messages, they chat with their friends, or they just go on the internet generally. Now, this research was just for us to understand what actually does young people do on the internet, so that we can know what kind of programs should we be designing to ensure that they are actually protected when they are online. So the biggest thing that they do is chat rooms. Your Twitters, your Facebooks, Mixit, that's where children are. That's where they spend. That's their new playground. They don't play outside anymore. They play on Mixit and Twitter and Facebook. Now, unfortunately, these areas, as much as we want to encourage children to use technology because it is good for their development, it is good for them to understand technology, because the world that they operate in today is just about technology. But there are unfortunately dangers in the cyberspace. Mainly what we are concerned about is the creation, possession, and distribution of child pornography. So that use of children in pornographic films is not just done by adults. It's done by the children themselves. So that's one of the biggest challenges that we have. So they post themselves, they post their friends, thereby exposing everybody to abuse by other adults. Exposure of children to inappropriate material, because they then circulate these things. They come across pornographic sites, then they circulate to their friends and everybody else. And so they themselves are exposing themselves to inappropriate content. But also when they're on Facebook, you can't, when I say I'm a 10-year-old, nobody can say I'm not when I'm on Facebook, because they don't see me. I paste the kind of picture that I want to paste. I portray the kind of image that I want to portray. So adults then target them, because they also pretend to be older people and stuff. So adults target them and they send them information. They send them unwanted pictures. So they are being exposed to inappropriate content on the internet. They are being sexually exploited. I think the CEO earlier on alluded to the cases that we now know that are currently happening in the country about people who have met on Facebook and have been sexually exploited. There are other issues, of course, which we don't really focus on, about ID theft and online safety. Okay, online safety we do focus on, but ID theft is another problem that children are exposed to. Cyberbullying is the biggest challenge as well. They get sent pictures that they don't want. They get people harassing them online. That's another problem. They get addicted to technology and pornography, because these two things are actually addictive, and then you have another problem on your hand. And they can also get abducted, and they are getting groomed, because they get exposed continuously to sexually explicit content that they start thinking is acceptable actually. So the biggest problem is the accessibility of the internet, and we don't want to limit that because we think that it's actually good for children to be exposed to the internet. The unmonitored use I've already spoken about. The cell phones, the social networks, and the chat services are our biggest problems. Lack of awareness. That's where we come in as the Film and Publication Board and as this committee as well to say, are children aware of these dangers that are on the internet and what can be done? Because we are realizing that we can no longer just say we are going to monitor them. We have to make them aware so that as they make these decisions, they are aware of the possible dangers that they could face. They engage in dangerous behavior on the internet, and technology has made it very easy to distribute. If I create an image today, it can reach the entire world within a split second, whereas in the past, it would have to be sent by post and all this. So even these children, once they've created these images of themselves, unfortunately, they can't get them back. So they then go and commit suicide because now the whole world has seen them naked and all these challenges. They pose as adults and they consume inappropriate content. Most websites that sell explicit content will say, are you 18? Children say yes. There are no verification mechanisms to say, is this really an 18-year-old or not? So they pose as adults and then they consume this inappropriate. So the exposure that we are trying to avoid is happening and facilitated by the internet and technology. I've spoken about the cyberbullying as an emerging challenge. Mostly now, increasingly, we are seeing cyberbullying. The generation gap, I think the CEO has spoken about already, to say parents don't understand these gadgets. If I ask committee members now who are sitting around this table, how many of your children have smartphones, and do you understand? Do you check what they do on the smartphones? Do you understand these Facebooks and Twitters and all these things? I don't know if I'm going to get 50% of you saying yes.
Are they on Facebook themselves?
Are you on Facebook? Twitter? Because you need to be on Facebook in order to be able to monitor this. So you become their friends, and then occasionally they post something, they've forgotten that the parent is the friend, and then you sort of get a sense of what
they don't want us.
But obviously the impact on society then becomes that there's early sexual activity, there's teenage pregnancies and all these additional burdens for teachers, and the parents are really, really not coping. I think exposure of children to inappropriate content, we've really spoken about it, but I think most of you, I think you said you are from the Northern Cape. There was a big, big problem that we had with a website called O Toilet. It then spread to other provinces, but it started mainly in the Northern Cape, where people were then, it's the cyberbullying that we are talking about, where even me as an adult or as a child, because they had a school section, maybe as an adult I can take the bullying, but they had a school section where they will then say horrible things about a childhood, and the entire school knows, and their peers from other provinces, they know, and then it's problematic. Even as an adult also, it's bullying. I don't know if you can call it bullying because it's adults, but somebody will just say bad things about me, and I can't do anything about it.
Is this like the toilet thing because of the word "hot" or what? I don't understand this toilet thing.
Yeah, it was called toilet. I don't know. It started in the Northern
Cape.
You
dump everything there. What you say?
Yeah. Oh. About people. So that's another thing. And we did try as the Film and Publication Board to shut it down. We succeeded eventually in getting some cell phone companies to actually block it on their websites and all that. But because we didn't really have a direct mandate on the cyberbullying, we couldn't intervene efficiently in a quick manner.
What was that called? Sorry?
O-Toilet.
O-Toilet.
Yeah.
I think it's still active.
Yeah.
But if you try to get it through your cell phone, you may not be able if you have Vodacom, because they
blocked it. So Vodacom did put it off.
Vodacom blocked it. I think the other networks followed after that.
So you can get it on the internet if you are using your...
But sometimes they say the URL keeps on changing, so you... You may be lucky to still get it on the cell phone because they may have changed the URL or something. There's some technical things that go on that.
So the other exposure to inappropriate content is also in the media. I mean, we saw the Sowetan story that was splashed all over, and you just, if you forget everything else and you just think about the children, you say this is inappropriate exposure to children it's exposure of children to inappropriate content, you know. And worldwide, there's evidence that actually the child pornography is on the rise. There were statistics that said 60% of all adult websites on the internet. And if you just type adult website, just see how many websites. It's over 20 million websites. But 60% of those contain images of children under 10. So that just shows you how rife this child pornography is. So the use of children in pornographic content is so rife. And then it was said that of that 60%, 80% of these websites actually contain images of children under 2. So that, I mean, you just see, so that's why we don't even call it child pornography, and we call it sexual abuse images of children, because it's actually sexual abuse of children. It's just turned into an image, but it's sexual abuse of children. So what have we done as a country? I think we have legislation. If a visitor from another country came into our country, they will see that, in fact, there's legislation that focuses on the protection of children online. We have an online and telephonic reporting facility that's linked to police and international networks. So if you came across child pornography and you wanted to report it, you are in South Africa, you can report it. If we investigate and we find that it's actually hosted elsewhere, because we can't really do much because most of it is on the internet, so it's hosted elsewhere. So we then have international partnerships with other entities that deal with this matter. So we can refer it to a call center in US to ensure that their police take action on that. We have awareness programs for parents, for learners, and for teachers. Of course, there's limited funding, as the CEO has said, so we are not able to reach everybody that we would like to reach, just to create awareness about these dangers. We do research. I was just referring to the research that we did now last year. And obviously, in the media, we partner and we ensure that we highlight these gaps, these challenges. Partnerships with law enforcement. We have a draft MOU with the police department, which we are really struggling to finalize on how we can quickly act on issues of child pornography that come about and are referred to the police. How can we ensure that there's quick action on these cases that are referred? And we do partner with other government departments, including social development. Last year, during 2010, we partnered with them on the 2010 campaign as well, and which we believe was quite a successful campaign. I've spoken about the global partnerships. We are a member of InHope, which is a body of internet call centers that deal with illegal content around the world. So as the Film and Publication Board, we are a member, and we are able to refer the cases as they come, if they are not hosted here, but they involve maybe South African children or other children for that matter. Civil society, we work with civil society and we work with industry as well. In terms of the legal aspects, yes, we have access to the international framework and our own South African legislation, including the Children's Act and the Film and Publications Act and Sexual Offences Act. Now, my focus for the day would be on the Films and Publications Act, which criminalizes the creation, possession, and distribution of child pornography. So any image or description of a person who's under the age of 18 or made to appear like they are under 18, engaged in any form of sexual conduct, is a criminal offense. So at least those people can be prosecuted. And we don't distinguish between whether it's a real image or a cartoon-like image, because in other countries they do. They say if it's a cartoon-like image, it doesn't matter that it looks like a child. It's not really a real child. But in South Africa, our legislation says it doesn't matter. If it's made to look like it's under 18 or if it's actually a child under 18, it's actually a criminal offense. Exposure of children to inappropriate material is another issue that we has been now made a criminal offense as well. There's regulations for internet service providers to ensure that they register and they monitor what content goes through their networks as well, just to try and limit the availability of these images. The social networks as well, the amendments to the FBA Act have ensured that there's an obligation for social networks to self-regulate to ensure that children are protected. So your Mixit, your Facebook, they are supposed to actually have, and they do have most of them, monitoring mechanisms to gauge what's going on their own networks. And in terms of internet service providers, they need to do all that's in their power to take reasonable steps to prevent their services being used for illegal purposes. They must report to Southern Police Services, and they need to preserve evidence. This is just to make sure that at least from a prosecution perspective, there is sufficient evidence that we can get should we suspect somebody to be involved in creating or distributing child pornography, mainly referring to adult members of society as well. I think this is more information about the ISPs. I've spoken about the hotline that we've got that was established in 2008. And we are not really on this hotline getting a lot of reports, because obviously child pornography is a bit of an underground criminal activity. So it's not a lot of people who are coming forth. So that's what we need to do. We try and popularize it as much as we can, but I think since 2008 we have received less than 200 cases on this hotline, which we have referred to South African Police Services to deal with them. So on the hotline, all we do is we receive reports from members of the public and refer them to the police. We are not really mandated to do more than just receive the reports and refer to the police. So the police are the one who must ensure prosecution and punishment in partnership with other relevant government departments. But what we find with the cases that we've come across is that they are mostly hosted outside South Africa. They are hosted in other countries. So hence, we are then limited in what we can do. Hence, our global partnership with other people, because if they are not hosted here, there's very little that you can do to shut those websites down. But we still report these to the police. And in terms of the future, we think there's a need for a countrywide strategy on internet safety, just for the entire country, because yes, there is interventions here and there, but I think we need just a holistic strategy on internet safety and what the different role players can do. And this is it. We haven't done anything, but I think Department of Communications is already working on something that's going to attend to issues of internet safety. Inclusion of internet safety module in the school's curriculum, because children are accessing the internet, they are getting exposed. The biggest culprit of exposure of children to inappropriate content is the internet, is the cell phone which they use to get the internet. So if they can be taught at school so that they grow up knowing that in fact internet safety is a big issue, and it's a big issue worldwide, it's not just for South Africa, globally there is a big problem on issues online protection of children. Countries are now taking, and South Africa is one of the first countries on the continent to actually have all these measures in place. Now there's countries like Kenya who have now followed suit and are taking the issues seriously as well. But if this can be included in the school's curriculum, it would really help for children to grow up knowing about the internet, because the internet is here to stay. They need it. And just an information hub on internet safety, which the FPB has already started, but we are obviously expanding on it to ensure that anybody who needs information on the internet safety can access that kind of information. Countrywide awareness campaign, we would like to do more in this area, because we think that if people are aware of the possible dangers, that can go a long way. Both teachers, learners, parents, caregivers, anybody who deals with children, if they can just be given awareness programs on the problems of internet and child pornography. It will go a long way towards ensuring the reduction of these challenges. Filtering tools, we are engaging industry. And they are quite a little bit reluctant because we are then saying, if the problem is the internet, should we filter all content that is inappropriate? But we are obviously engaging in and looking at best practices in the different countries to see how others have approached this problem. So we haven't yet started except just to have discussions with industry, but we are hoping that if we can look at that in detail, that when you go and buy a cell phone today, it must rather block all content until you produce an ID and say, I am Mapula, I'm over 18. Then they can unblock it, then you can access. Because then that will help that all these children with cell phones will not be able to go into websites that have inappropriate content. Global cooperation, definitely we need to increase that. And we have a draft, we have the guidelines that we developed with many government departments, education, social development, South African Police Services, Justice, just on how child pornography must be handled when people come across. So there's roles for different government departments to be playing. And we are now engaging our stakeholders to see if they can adopt these and ensure that in all their programs, they have adopted that approach of how to manage child pornography images. From the committee, really, I think there's a lot that the committee can do to assist curbing this scourge in the country. The main thing being just the elevation of the issues of child online safety, because you are the committee that deals with children's issues. So if you can ensure that they are elevated at the highest level so that all these gaps in legislation that exist can be plugged and we can ensure that we have every single school having awareness programs, we have every single NGO that deals with children understanding what child pornography is, creating online online child pornography programs for children, that would really, really help us. And if the committee could champion debates in Parliament and the NCOP on child pornography-related matters, we are available if there's any research work that you would like to propose that we do in order to empower you with more information, we are available at the Children's Education Board to do that. And we would like child pornography issues to feature in government's outreach programs where possible, so that we can ensure that every single South African is aware of these issues. And we can partner as the Film and Publication Board where we are able to, with our limited resources. From a civil society perspective, I think your child care services, civil society, we really want to ensure that there's awareness programs at that level and incorporation of programs to prevent and deal with the effects of child pornography in child protection services. So that's what we are really hoping that the committee, if possible, can assist our campaign on cyber safety to ensure that our children are safe. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Mapula.
Yes.
Who's the other? Gentlemen, do you have anything that you need to? Okay. Then I will give over to the members if they have any questions. If you've got any question, members, I'm waiting for Honorable Blanche and Honorable Mnube. Honorable Blanche.
Thank you, Chair. I must also acknowledge the challenges that the board has just indicated on. Especially on the, I know of the issue of toilet website, which were very detrimental in some parts of this country. I have observed strings of divorce caused by the same website in one area. where children would allege put names of high profile people there, and the next thing there's turmoil in the family and there's queue in the divorce court. So what I want to check with the board, as they are doing their campaigns, who are you working with in your campaigns throughout the country? Are you going alone as the board and, you know, roll out your campaigns and advocacy about the pitfalls and the dangers in the website, online problems? Or are you working with other organizations? And secondly, I also want to check with the board in terms of the same campaigns. Did you blow your campaigns to rural areas, rural communities currently? And if so, in which province did you find that there is a serious problem, you know, in terms of the online, this online inappropriate use of the cyberspace? Maybe the other question will be that we as parents, like you said in your second slide, that most of the parents are not at home to monitor the children's use of these technological instruments, gadgets. So I want to check with you yourselves whether in terms of your challenges that you have picked up, what is the programs or mechanism that we have put in place to make sure that at least this matter, these problems that we have identified, is getting attention and resolve. Those are the questions that I wanted to check with the public. Thank you, Chair.
Nyabonga, Chairperson. Chairperson, maybe let me just add on what Honorable Blackie said in terms of the memorandum of understanding. You are in linked to Home Affairs. And the social development, basic education, police, I think that's in Kasha. Let me just raise this on Nathan Cash. I'm not sure whether it falls under you or it's another board. The independent broadcasters, like Soweto TV. We laugh about Mr. Mbowe. I've raised it with the Deputy Minister of Arts and Culture. I've raised it with the DG of Arts and Culture. This Sunday, he was doing the same thing with blood all over in TV. What are you doing? Is it with you? But also the Department of Communications, that ministry. What is your link, your linkage? Because seemingly everybody is afraid of Mbowe, because Soweto TV is an independent broadcaster. So people buy rights, buy space. So for Soweto TV to leave, this man is giving him millions that no any other government department can give. But we can't continue having this thing that is promoting immorals, that is denigrating women, that and all those things. I mean, yeah. So your network of interaction, I think you need to broaden it up. Let me also add in terms of the education that you also have to to look into working with the parliamentary constituency services. They have outreach programs. If you have pamphlets, you can also give them to educate communities. But they say, let me take health department. They talk of this is how much or how far we've issued out condoms. However, there's no guarantee that those condoms are used for the intended purpose. There are many purposes of that those condoms. Last time, 2 weeks back, I heard that you can also clean a CD with a condom. CD.
Yeah.
And they use it to fasten their stockings. So the more you see people taking condoms, you think, no, they're using it correctly. Just like the education on this. We'll talk about this, but at the end, a person that is having a cell phone is the deciding person, you see. So then even the word of God, you plow it and those that have ears can then hear. So you need to broaden up the net. I think also they say the mountain does not go to Mohammed. Mm-hmm. Mohammed goes to the mountain. You also have to establish a page on Facebook and teach, because most of the people that we talk about are also on Facebook. So create a page there and talk about these things in terms of warning them. What are the effects long term and short term, so that you're getting them where they are. Thank you.
Honorable Faber.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, I am a bit worried because the same thing that Honorable Pinky was saying about the communication department and yourself. And the reason for that, there's this thing called cyber security. Now, the cyber security regulations is not in place. And I want to know, what are you guys going to do about it? Because communication in you should link onto that to see to it that cyber security is sorted out, because if you look at all the things in your presentation, it's all about cyber security. If you can sort that out, half of the problem is sorted out. Then I want to know, what training does your people have that classify films? And I'll tell you why. Sometimes it's got a 13 parental guidance, and I would look at this movie with my sons, and I would think to myself, my God, how can this only have a 13 parental guidance? There might be sexual explicit things on, maybe it's soft and so on, but still the message comes over. Even if you look at the soapies that the women look bold and beautiful, for instance, sometimes things that comes on there,
yeah.
I don't want my children to see, because it exposes my children. And it is at the time in the afternoon when children watch TV. So this is what I'm asking, and then the same thing goes the other way around. There are some films which got a 16 violence and stuff. And I mean, our country is bombarded with violence. People see it, our children see it on TV, which is not even that violent, but it's got a 16. So I want to know, what training do your people have to get to these? Do they have got are they psychologists or not? And if not, I want to know, how do they know what is good for our children? Because we were talking about sexually explicit things of underage kids, for instance, even if it only portrays it in a cartoon effect. Now I'm coming back to cartoons of children, and I'm not talking about sex, I'm talking about violence. If you look at all of these kiddies things, mm-hmm. it's a hell of a lot of violence, and it instigates violence in our community, in our society. So I don't think we must just think of it that... We were just saying now, I mean, this is what came out of your mouth saying to us,
sexual explicit, even if it's only a cartoon, it portrays the sexual act.
And I want to say exactly the same on violence.
With the cartoons where these small little monikies clap each other and the blood spat in al daardie goed.
That is exactly the same. So kids see this go-choo and I don't know what, whoever's choo-choo or whatever, and they clap each other. And this is actually things that then aggravates the to children. So I think, coming back to this, I want to know the training. Do these guys have training? How do they decide to make an informative decision on what is going to be under 13, what is going to be over 13? Because that is a bloody difficult, but I believe also the most important job. And then to advertise your hotline. I mean, I've heard about the hotline, and maybe right at the bottom of the screen, but we're so little small. But I mean, we want to do education in schools. We want to spend a hell of a lot of money on things. But you guys have just said to us as well, the kids are not playing out in the, you know, on the cricket fields and stuff. They're on the cell phones. So these hotlines should be there, and perhaps on these hotlines also give adults a bit of education on how to look after your kid's cell phone. Just a small little thing on how a parent should perhaps, how he could look at it. Because, I mean, I'm full of technology. I mean, my iPhone, my iPad, I enjoy my technology. But even now, my child's got a smartphone. I don't know what he's looking at. There's no ways for me to take his Motorola and sort out and see what has he been looking at. On the computer, I can go into the history of the internet and I check that up. But what I'm saying is, there should be some type of, and this is coming back to that cyber security regulation. If you got that in place, I heard that you were saying, you know, when a person buys a phone and you can lock it, and even if he, only if he's over 18, he can open it. I can tell you that won't work, because the next day that child will get someone that's 18, a friend or something, and they will open it. There's always a way around it. So we as parents won't be able to stop it. The only way to stop it is via a cyber security system that blocks it immediately. Thank you. That's all I can say.
Thanks, Honorable Faber. I just wanted to add on, I'm not closing up for members, but I just wanted to add on one issue Honorable Mube has raised about the PCOs or our parliamentary constituency offices that we have in our areas. They are parliament on the ground, ne, where people can get information. I think if you've got regional offices as this board, the campaigns that the regional offices are having should be linked with maybe with one of our offices or one of the departments that usually we work with, a department like social services and home affairs. And I don't know what is your relation with this department. Maybe you've got just a relationship. I don't know what type of a relationship do you have, because I think because we meet for the first time and we get this presentation for the first time, I for myself, I don't know, where do you get the budget from? Are you a government entity, or are you from one of the government entities? Are you working under one of the government entities? And how much do you use? And how much budget do you get? And all things that are concerning your budget. And also, I'm worried also, Honorable Faber, about this age restriction thing, because for me, it is not working at all. For me, it is not working at all. For as long as this film is during the time the children are at home, and it says 16... 16, it shows 16 violence or nudity. But if it's during the afternoon when they are from school, I'm not at home yet, they will want to see what is this that is for the 16-year-old only. So I don't think this, it needs more regulation. this age restriction. What are my other questions? I think I'm raising just concerns on these issues. Otherwise, members have got in and they touched on some of the issues that I wanted to raise. But if there is no our content advisor wanted to say something also before you respond.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not asking a question or giving comments, but just for information purposes in terms of what we are doing. I've just submitted actually a proposal to the NCOP entitled Investing in Children. And we, just 2 weeks ago, presented the same proposal to the UNICEF, and I think we've got the support of UNICEF. They're just waiting for us to come up with a program in terms of what we want to do. And I'm just sharing that information from with you so that you can, because at the moment we proposed certain topics, and I must be honest that child protection and child pornography issues were not part of that at the moment, but maybe you can get in there as well. Maybe we can communicate and see how you can become involved as Films and Publications Board. Thank you.
Over to you, CEO, for a response.
Thank you, Chair. The questions are so many, so I'm just going to get my colleagues ready to also take their share of the questions. So I'll deploy the questions as I go through them. The first question was, who are we working with? I think the bigger answer to that question is we work with everybody. And you can see the detail, for instance, in our report that we've circulated, that we work with a variety of partners. So when we go to a province, for instance, we'll scan who are the key NGOs or people who are working in the space that we're working with, what is the most relevant department, which municipality is most relevant. Sometimes we get influenced by proposals that come from provinces of people who want to work with us and etc. But we try very hard to get partners on the ground. We use our compliance monitors who are based in the provinces, who know the province better than us, who are in head office to help us to identify partners. So we've done lots of work with religious institutions, traditional leaders, and local government institutions, and all kinds of partners, NGOs on the ground. We're not that picky. Whoever that we get who's interested in working with us, we try and align our agenda to be able to partner. We get influenced a lot by what kind of audience are we going to be interacting with. Remember, we work with everybody, so if it's purely children, we'll still partner. If it's adults or parents, we'll partner. If it's just community members, we'll partner, because we have to reach out to all those people. So I think I can just say to honourable members from the constituencies and communities, feel free to call us. We always say this even when we present to our Home Affairs Portfolio Committee. Feel free to call us to your community. We'll do our work. As long as your people will just help with mobilisation, but the basics, we bring them from our offices, and we have people in provinces that can, once we get an invite, we know how to send it internally, and they know how to activate it. In terms of rural outreach, which areas have a serious challenge? We last year, if you look at this report, we've been to about 8 provinces. I don't know which one have we not been to, but I just saw in the report, specifically on the campaign, that we've reached out about 8 provinces, and we've heard about we visited about 36 schools. We've had about 36 outreach activities in different provinces, and rural areas are our buyers. because now we know that kids in rural areas have cell phones and they've got the smartphones like kids in urban areas. They have access to TV like kids in urban areas. And parents in rural areas are as illiterate anyway when it comes to cell phone issues or new media issues as parents in that's one area where there's no rural-urban divide in my view, yeah. That parents are equally illiterate. When you are illiterate as a parent, it doesn't matter where you stay, you are simply illiterate on the issues of new media. So we have reached rural areas mainly through our work with traditional leaders and through our work with schools as well as the religious community. But there's always a room for improvement. When we prioritize invitations from rural areas because we know that the need is much more greater there than the urban areas. Then the cell phone challenge, I think, CEO, you can take up the issue around what mechanisms are we putting in place to deal with the challenge of new media. I think particularly the question was around the cell phone. I think it was the third question. The SAPS MOU, I'll also like COO to talk to it. But I think anyway, the long and the short of the SAPS MOU is that the MOU is ready. We're waiting for General to sign it when he has time. And we have worked with almost every division that's relevant at SAPS. And the last communique we got from them was that the General wants to sign it himself. And it hasn't happened yet. We've had appointments that have been cancelled. And but I must say that even though the MOU has not been signed at a national level, we have a good working relationship with SAPS on the ground level. I think Clive can also share his own experiences because he is a compliance monitor. He's a team leader for about three provinces, and he's a compliance monitor based here in the Western Cape. I don't know if, Clive, you can share, but the sense that I got from the reports we get from compliance monitors is that there's very good working relations with police stations on the ground and with police officers, and I think that's what we want. That is important. Secondly, child pornography is identified as a priority crime by SAPS, and indeed when there are child pornography cases, whether reported by us or that SAPS has picked up, which we follow, we do get satisfaction that there's proper investigations and all kind of things regarding those cases. Sometimes there's delay. I guess the delay is with the justice system. I know one delay. It has been the Pretoria case. It sort of disappeared from the radar. The Pretoria case that involved a family that was involved in child pornography. But the case has been in the courts, and I'm not really sure at this stage what's happening. But it's more of the interface between the justice system, I guess, and the law enforcement system. The issue of Pastor Mboro, I was laughing because you are not the first one, Honorable, to raise this issue. I've been struggling in my mind. We've actually asked our legal unit to get a few tapes of the Pastor Mboro issue and analyze them and advise where can we intervene, because our powers and authority is very limited. In fact, on TV, we don't have any powers on authority because that's done through BCCSA. But Soweto TV is an independent, yes, TV station, so they don't belong to the BCCSA. If we have any complaint about them, we'll have to process it directly through ICASA. So there's some work we're doing. I don't know how far it will take us. Our legal unit is basically looking at some of the tapes to look in terms of the FPB classifiable elements or issues that we're looking at. Do we have a case? This is the same process we followed with the Sowetan article of the cops who were having sex at the office when the thing was shown, the pictures. So we had to take it to our legal and say, in terms of our legislation, it was, when it looked real, I don't know. I think it was real. So what we did, we actually, I think, I don't know how they got the copy of the DVD at the office, but they did get it, and they did analyze it. But then we had to look at that and say, what is the strongest way in which we can challenge this, understanding our limitations in terms of our law that's setting us up? And we found the angle of child protection, because Sowetan is a family newspaper, and therefore the kind of content that goes there must not be compromising to children and must not be exposing exposing children to undesirable content. I mean, on the basis of that, we did a complaint. We wrote a complaint to the press ombudsman, and we're not confident that it's going to go anywhere. But at the end, the press ombudsman agreed with us, and I think they did their own penalties with Soweto. And so we have to use systems that are there. Even with Pastor Mboro, if we find anything that is in line to, and I'm sure we can, that is in contravention of our own legislation, then we will write to ICASA and complain officially with ICASA, and they will have to take the matter up. But the biggest challenge is that the content that's on TV, it's not our mandate. It's a mandate of... It's actually nobody's mandate.
That's why nobody...
In reality, it's nobody's mandate, because the Department of Communication is a policy department. They don't deal with the regulatory issues. ICASA registers and approves certain aspects, but they don't deal with the content of what the television puts in place. When we've had engagement with broadcasters, they've assured us that they follow our classification standards, and we have an agreement with them that they will participate in our training processes, so that we ensure that even though they are untouchables, but they are working within a particular framework. Because on the issue of content classification, unfortunately, our laws are such that really they do their own thing. They are self-regulating at this stage, and we can't interfere with that. The links with the OC, I'll also like the COO to speak on this, because we have, and I think focusing on cybersecurity in particular, because it's been raised, because there are processes we're working with them. Partnerships with the Parliamentary Education Unit, together with the constituency offices, I think it's something we're going to build into our program specifically, so that our people in the provinces, it can be part of their deliverables. Under normal circumstances, we should be doing it, but I don't think we're really doing it properly. The Facebook page, we have a Facebook page on Facebook. I think it's a bit redundant now. Maybe we just need to... We have a Facebook page with about 3,000 followers on Facebook, but we'll continuously look at ways of making it exciting to people, because after a while, I think Facebook just gets into your space, and you don't want to see anything from Facebook again. Comms Department, Cybersecurity, COO, I've asked her to take that question. Training for classifiers, I think COO can speak. It's one of her deliverables. He can speak in detail on the issue. I think what I can say from my part is that we have noticed the violence on cartoons and games. There's lots of violence that takes place there. And when we pick up, as part of our strategy now, we have a turnaround strategy, and we are appointing, even though we don't have a responsibility over TV, but we are appointing compliance monitors who are going to focus on the digital space, including TV. So what those people will do is to watch channels and check what content is there, so that we can effectively monitor and complain through the structures that are out there for complaining and take up those cases. I have a four-year-old son as well. I mean, I know that the undesirable content that is in cartoons. One day I was sitting with my son, and my son says to my helper, "You stupid sissy." And I'm like, "Where did you get that?" Because we don't use that language in my house. "Where did you get that?" He's like, "No, Mama, there's stupid dogs on TV. It's a cartoon that they're watching, which is called Stupid Dogs." So it's that kind of language, really, that kids may not know much about the harm they are causing, but they are just picking up things from the TV and they play the word. Sometimes it looks more appropriate than it should be. So that issue and the games, it's another issue that we struggle with in terms of classifying. I mean, we have a profile of classifiers who are old people who can't even really play the games. But besides the fact that the classifiers are old, because if you want psychologists and all these kind of people, you're not going to get them in young people. Your people who can best classify the games are people who are supposed to play the games.
Yes.
And it may take a week or 2 weeks to crack a game. And is FPB prepared with its limited resource to invest on one classifier to play a game for 2 weeks? What balances should we be putting in place? The system we are introducing, currently when we classify games, the publishers record different stages of the games, and we look at publishers' notes, because games that come to South Africa would have been published in the US or Europe. because really there are not much, I don't know if there's any games that are being developed in the country, but my understanding is that most of the games come out of the country into our market, but they would have already been out in the European and the US market. So what we'll do, we will look at the video, the classifiers will look at the video, and they will look at the publisher's notes and will do their own investigation. Ideally, what we're trying to do now, we want to take a sample of those video of those games and get young people to play them under the supervision of classifiers who are adults, play the game up to its last stage so that we know whether the decisions we are giving are really decisions that are appropriate for that game. And honestly, now we don't know whether those decisions are appropriate, because we're simply informed about the recording of the stage is not really the playing of the game. The second issue we're putting in place is that we are developing a self-classification system for gaming. So as a producer of the game, you know your game better. Once it's done and everything, you are ready to submit to us for classification, you can do your own self-classification online. And immediately that will give you a decision. This is an international trend that's being put in place. It will give you a decision. So what we come and do as the film and publication at the end, we come like the auditors would come, sample and look whether the you have put correct information and etc. And then we will have to agree with industry on penalties. And it has to be very high penalties. I mean, I know with the PEGI system they use internationally, the penalties are as high as $1 million US dollars. For if a publisher would have put incorrect information, maybe the game has violence and you say it doesn't have violence, and in the auditing it's picked up the game had violence and you had registered that it had no violence, so you get those huge penalties. Because with the development of games, we were approached by Microsoft this year. They said that they are planning to put about 5,000 games in the South African market, Microsoft alone. We will never have capacity to really play those games and classify those games. So self-classification is also a model that we are looking at with regards to the games. I think the issue of advertising, the online using digital marketing, I think the issue is around how do we use the digital space really to market ourselves and the work that we are doing and communicate. It's an issue. We'll have to take it back to the office, to our strategies, regional offices, links with PCOs. I think I've spoken to that one. Where do we get the budget from? We our budget is appropriated through the Department of Home Affairs. So we're an entity of Home Affairs. We're a public entity. 80% of our funding comes from the National Fiscus, National Treasury to Home Affairs, and we get it on a quarterly basis from Home Affairs. We have a budget of 65 million this year. I think 80% of that comes from National Treasury and 20% comes from the revenue fees we collect from industry. We follow all the processes like annual reporting like all public entities do, and we've recorded an unqualified report for the second year now. In terms of the other issue that was raised, how we use our budget, we have an employee establishment of about 70 people, some in provinces, some at head office, and you can imagine that takes a bit of the budget. I think about 30% of our budget goes to employee costs, and the rest we use it for our operations and other capital expenses that we incur in the organization. I think what we can do also is to send members the annual report, just so that you can have a much more firmer view, because the annual report will give you more detail. Age restriction, you're saying, ma'am, they are not working. They are not working in particular on television. Yes, and it's an issue I think the committee can help us to take up with somebody about the content on television and how that content is user-friendly or not to children. We've had long-standing battles with ETV, for instance, in that I'm sure you know about Naked News, you know about porn and all things that happen on ETV, and the reality is that from our part we don't have much we can do except make noise. I mean, one of the successful noises we did, I guess, was the 24-hour channel that was kind of envisage or people will think about our 24-hour porn channel for DSTV, which we, together working with NGOs and other people, we mobilized and said, no, no, it would not be appropriate for kids. No matter how strong are the security features, kids are going to break those security features. As long as it's at home and they come back early from school and the parents are not there, they are not going to be able to. So we built a case which at the end made a multi-choice to backtrack from that idea. So it's an ongoing battle. Every time we pick up something and there's always something new on TV that has this undesirable content, we have to raise concerns and make the noise. Sometimes we win, sometimes we don't win. I think the issue around investing in children, we would like to see the proposal and would certainly like to partner with you, with the NCOP, and see how best we've got lots of topics we'd want to bring in that relates to cyber safety of children and the work that we do, and certainly we can work around that. I think we'll just have to give you the correct people from a technical point of view in the organization to work with that, but we would be happy to work with you on that one. COO and Clive, over to you.
Thank you, ma'am. In terms of the Department of Communications, we have a working relationship that we are trying to formalize into an MOU. So we are in the process of doing that. But what we are jointly also doing is to look at legislative gaps on the issues that affect us both, so that we can then agree how do we deal with this. Is it just an issue of including it in the MOU, or must we be proposing for amendments in future on the legislation? So there is a working relationship there, and we are dealing with all these issues, including the issues of broadcasting, where we are saying, okay, broadcasters are not regulated by us, but they are regulated by an entity of yours. How can we work together? We are also engaging ICASA and BCCSA on different issues on working towards a single classification system in the country. The issue of classifiers, their training, we appoint people from a wide range of backgrounds, lawyers, psychologists, educators, social workers, different people, really, and people who are mainly involved in community development. They do go through a training that we have developed in-house that looks at the Constitution, the Film and Publications Act, other related legislation, and they use the classification guidelines which we developed. We're in the process of developing new ones now, but we develop every 2 years, and they use that to decide whether a film should be given a 10 or a 13 or a 16 or an 18. So we are in the process of reviewing those guidelines, and they should be ready in December for public comments. So we invite the committee as well to make comments in those guidelines so that we can ensure that they are reflective of societal norms and values. Of course, we can't always be able to satisfy the entire society, because we have people who are on extreme ends. So you always have to find what is the right balance, you know, and that's the challenge. But it will be going out for public comments in December, January, in that period. So you are welcome to make comments and ensure that it reflects the morals of our society.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question that you ask is the DVD of the Soweto front page, is it real? It is indeed. For the last, in September, we've taken about 120 of those DVDs from the streets in Cape Town. It has already been sold in Cape Town. There's a DVD out here.
They produced it into a DVD.
And then on the issue of partnerships, we have fairly good relationships with especially with SOPS in Cape Town. There is in the Western Cape, there's 4 FCS units that we deal with, and in the past month alone we've accompanied them on 4 to 4 schools where there were issues with cell phone sex videos that were made by children on cell phones. We recently had actually a request yesterday from Oudtshoorn Police. There was an issue also of sex videos that was made on cell phones. We had one about 2 weeks ago in Kensington. From the police side, in the last 2 months, there was about 8 instances at schools in Cape Town where children made sex videos on their cell phones and we had a fairly good relationships where they normally contact us and we then accompany them where we also do a short presentation and I think so far it has been very effective. And then also on the CPS of the subs, we are regularly invited when they have the community meetings where we also do presentations to the communities and it's also very effective. Also community outreaches. From our side in the provinces, we establish relationships with, for arguments in Cape Town, we've got Molo Songololo. If they have any outreaches, they will also notify us. If we go, maybe if we're not there in person, we then will give them a material that they can distribute and also as part of the awareness campaigns. But on a ground level, there is indeed a lot. We've got relationships with the metros, the mayoral committee on safety and security, where where they do the informal traders. Whenever they have an informal traders operations, we are on their list and they notify the firms and publications board because more often than not there is also this illegal firms that has been distributed by also illegal vendors on the street, and that is the relationships that we have on ground level in the province. And so far it has worked well and we're just growing in establishing more relationships with partners. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable.
Yeah, Chairperson, you've just touched, there's an article on News 24 about Otson. Cell phone, 3 boys from Olson High School have been arrested on statutory rape after a sex video did the rounds at the school. And one victim is a 15-year-old girl that became a victim out of that. So that is why I was saying the whole question of partnership with Basic, Department of Basic Education. I think 3 weeks back there was that, I think the teacher was wearing short skirt or short dress and there was this learner who was like aiming beneath the teacher, whether taking video or whatever. and then after doing that, they circulate that, then they rape the students. So the other thing is the to say you also have to strike partnership as you go to rural areas, strike partnership with the traditional leaders. They have a very good impact or people listen to them. The other one is the church. Talking about pornography and sex, it's a little bit taboo, either to teachers or to parents. But yourselves in your outreach program, also get to the church and talk about these things. The question of the small fish. Even the distribution of the cities, police go to the small fry and leave, like even the drugs, they would arrest a smoker, a small fry, and leave the drug dealer or the manufacturer. So as you chase them in the street, they're supposed to be telling you where are we buying these things. So the police must then focus on that rather than the person that is selling 50 and get peanuts. The main person is that one who is manufacturing and do the mass production. Thank you.
Chair. Mine is just one. No, in my
unedited observation, I see a subtle connection between pornography and prostitution. You see, why I'm saying it, Jenny, both they use this inappropriate activity as means of income, getting money. There are some evidence of music videos. In fact, if I look at music videos nowadays, if it's a hot-selling video, it must have people with half-naked or naked people. Or it must have a language that deals with whether sex or something similar to that. So that connection is very close. And I just want to find out maybe from I know I'm asking too much to the publication board, where they get their mandate, they can't ask for allocation of additional mandate so that they must deal with all these other things, such as I am actually saying in music videos and other things that you are unable to attend to. But if you ask for additional mandate, maybe that mandate would help you to step in and minimize that, because nowadays the nudity is selling a lot and people are making a lot of money out of it. That is another point. And the other point, it's on the music, video you're talking about. I know of about two learners. One recently was suspended in a school because that learner and the boyfriend were doing this inappropriate activity on video. The video circulated in the school. And that school's principal is extremely, very strict. My friend, I know him, Minir Bankis, said, no, this cannot be allowed. And then a poor learner was expelled. Unfortunate part is that the partner, which is the boyfriend, is not in school. That was another issue. And in my, like I said, in my observation, it happens in two schools. In one school, in Bethel High School, in another school in town in Lichtenberg. So I'm saying, in most cases, the perpetrators, if they are children, there is no serious consequences for them. So they find it easy. That is why even if you find them with a video today, the next week you'll find another group of children doing the same thing, because there's no appropriate severe consequences for them, so that they must not do it, except to be some they rejoice chair to be expelled from schools. They bang at home and continue these kind of things. So I wanted to check with you, can't you request additional mandate so that we step in addition to what Honorable Pinky said, you know, working together with Department of Basic Education and all other stakeholders, but have your mandate get to those areas that you are unable to tap into, so that you are able to help the community. Because otherwise, I know for sure, Chad, now I get into my house, I found, I get in, my child was sitting with his mom, they were watching this program, and I'm not sure what channel was that, but it says thousand ways to die. But when I get in there, I saw a horrible thing. I just switched off the TV and stood there and said, no, you're not going to watch this thing. But from what I'm saying, they saw nothing wrong in that. People are dying in so many ways there, and it's so bad. But children are watching it. Sometimes they are watching it with parents, like I'm saying. So if you've got a mandate to deal with it, in as far as Honorable Nobe said correctly, where they come from. Because there's bigger people who are doing these things, but they make money, and at the ground people are suffering. So that is what I wanted to say, Chair. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. It's now that it's only today that I find out that I'm very much ignorant when it comes to TV programs. You know, some of the things that are said here by members are things that even the Mboro thing, I've never watched it. I don't know when does it come out. So I must be vigilant from now, from today, and from today to say, oh, going to lose.
I was actually thinking as you were speaking, Honourable Member, that you know the biggest headache for women and helpers is the Nigerian TV channel, because every helper wants to watch that channel. And most of those movies are 16 and above on the Nigerian channel. But if you have small children, I mean, children come, like my son comes from crèche before I'm home. So to what extent can I monitor? Do I have to take my DSTV card with me when I leave the house? Isn't that inhuman? And every time I talk to the helper, please do not watch this channel when the baby's around. Sometimes I get home, I find her watching, you know? And what are the rights of the helper vis-a-vis my rights and the protection of my child who is under her care? So the exposure to content is a battle that we just have to continuously raise awareness and hope that at the end people listen. I don't know what else, because legislation can help you to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. It gives you authority, but if you think about this as a crime, it's a crime that happens in the household, mm-hmm. which many people don't see it as a crime, and it's going to be difficult to report. Even if the household was to be monitored and policed, I mean, we don't have that capacity, mm-hmm. and you don't want to be in any state that polices everything, because you believe that parents and guardians should know what is right and what is wrong. Our campaign simply reinforce or support them in the knowledge that they have. The question about what else can be done, our board members are debating at the moment whether there is a need for review of our legislation. I'm not sure where that discussion is going to take, because our experience with the amendments that were done in 2009, it took 3 to 5 years to get those amendments done. And because we are operating in an industry that is so strong, that at the end, nothing much came out of amendments. Most of the things that we would have wanted to see coming out of the amendments at the end when the legislation was approved were watered down, because there were very strong lobby. There was a very strong lobby from the industry, publications and films around. Even the amendments were still referred to the High Court by SANEF together with the print media about some of the provisions they disagree with regarding the publication, the classification of publications such as magazines. They believe we should not be classifying magazines that are part of the newspaper establishments, that are part of the ombudsman. But if you were a person who reads magazines, you would know that lots of undesirable content is also in the magazines. A magazine like Cosmopolitan has completely turned out to be like an adult magazine that must go and be distributed in the adult shops other than at CNA, because the content has completely changed. I mean, that's where they can say 1,000 styles of having sex or things like that that they write. So what we see is that industry every day is pushing the bar. Every day they are testing how far can they go, because sex sells. And I mean, we classify also pornographic movies, and you know, you look at the stats of pornographic movies that come to us. I mean, with Sexpo, we classify thousands and thousands of pornographic movies that are going to be sold at Sexpo, and people buy them. So sex sells, and the industry is growing itself, so there's lots of opportunities for players in that industry on its own. So I guess it's an issue we'll come back and brief the committee really about whether the legislation review is something that's going to be taken by the board. We will, from this meeting, also give them a feedback. What worries us a lot is the bullying. The bullying that's because it's not legislated anywhere, that takes place in the new media space is one of the biggest worries. The other of the biggest worries is really to what extent can we do our compliance monitoring as an organization, and where there's overlapping mandates, because we're a middleman on many things. Lots of our mandates are overlapping with ICASA, with ASA, the Advertising Standards Authority. So I think it's important that whatever legislation harmonizes those overlapping mandates. So we work very well with those institutions, but it's important to harmonize also those clashing mandates as well. What we do when we pick up a case of an incident in school that involved kids and a sex video or this or that, we approach the school and we make an offer at least to do a workshop for the learners and the teachers in the school. We've done, I mean, the biggest case that we've dealt with was the one at, what was the school in Joburg? The one where NPA was involved, Jules. So we went back to, once everything had cooled down, we went back to Jules and we had workshops with the learners and educated them and everything about the child pornography and the dangers they subject themselves to. So I think I will follow up on this case of Otsoron and some... Clive's is the case that he's working on, and at the end we'll go to the school and have a workshop. Usually we prefer to wait until the dust has settled, because once a case like that happens, principals are uncomfortable to speak to people because they don't know what our agenda is. So we wait until the dust is settled. Maybe a few months later we approach them and say we'd like to do a workshop. We look at community organizations that we can work with and go to the school and do a workshop with the learners, just to ensure that I know this is a reactive strategy, in a sense that we should have done the workshop before the incident, okay, but you don't know where the incident is going to occur and how. And I agree that we need to work very closely with the Department of Education. When we go to a school, we have to seek permission from the Department of Education. So we would never go to a school without the Department of Education being aware that we are going to a school. We have to do a motivation and seek permission from them. And we have never had cases of being turned down by schools when we approach the schools. The issue of children being perpetrators and there's no serious consequence. I observed the case of Jules and the involvement of NPA, and if you remember in that case, NPA at some stage wanted to charge the kids. Mm. And there was a huge outcry from children's NGOs and people who were sympathizing with the kids. I really didn't know where I stood as a person. I was angry that those kids have done what they did, because I thought that they were in an age where they should have understood what they did would have compromised them. And I also understood that kids are very impressionable by virtue of being young. Mm. They are very impressionable and they make mistakes, and they should be allowed to make mistakes, but to what extent should kids be allowed to make mistakes? So for us, it was an important test case of how far can a case involving two kids in producing porn, because what they did was to produce child porn. Mm-hmm. Two kids who are below, who are underage, producing child porn that gets distributed by other kids, and it ends up being a national issue. But to what extent can you have consequences, and can you arrest those kids? Can you really take them to jail? They didn't do that for commercial purposes, but out of ignorance, out of social, of them being social beings. And I think it's these things that society must debate. The FPB wouldn't really have packaged answers on those things. I do think that it's important when kids are caught with that material, education for me is important. Mm. Yes, there must be consequences attached to that, but the first step is to engage with them and educate them, because you find that they get traumatized. Mm. And secondly, the issue of whether those kids should be suspended or chased out of a school or not is also another question that the Department of Education must deal with, because what impact would chasing kids out of school have on them? You're likely to have them dropping out of the school forever. And you're likely to create more challenges for yourself as a country if you were to take that position as a national position. But I know that currently with things like child porn and cyber safety, the Department of Education says the governing bodies have a responsibility to set policy and limits. Some schools do not allow cell phones, some schools do, and all kinds of things. But we do feel as FPB that the matter requires national policy and national national standards that must be set by the Department of Education. Because anyway, when these cases come up in school, they become national cases that put the Department of Education under lots of pressure to deal with and report on them. So it's part of those issues we're engaging with education on, whether do we as a country need a national standard or national policy around kids having cell phones in schools, and what they can do with those cell phones whilst they're in schools. Because think about it, if you were a teacher, I think it would be easy for people even to copy. I mean, I know maybe when I was in school, people used to write things on their hands or somewhere if they want to copy. But now it's a matter of just Googling, going to your cell phone and checking Google, what is it saying about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So you don't have to struggle and sneak in papers and all kinds of things. So what is the impact of having that cell phone, a kid bringing a cell phone to the school? If I were a parent and I had to decide, I would simply decide that my child is not going to carry a cell phone to the school. I think it's safer that way. But there's a very thin line on these issues, really. And parents have to play a much more crucial role. And I think we continuously have to see how technology develops and have state institutions that are ready to respond to those developments of technology. Teachers also come to us and say, but when we confiscate the cell phones of these kids because they are misbehaving, parents are the first people to come to us and shout at us and call us all kinds of names about this. So I guess the issue of national standards again is quite important to be resolved by the Department of Education. I think the last issue was around partnerships. And I think especially because we are working with this, we've come to present it. One of the partnerships we're working on very hard is with the Department of Social Development, simply because children's issues reside in that department. And I know there's an issue between where the Minister of Women in that department, but I think from a protective point of view, children's issues, we understand them to be residing in that department. So we are having engagements with the department, and I must say that we have received a very warm welcome by the minister to work with the department and see how best, ideally, we should be working with all their child care protection services to ensure that we bring in the element of the work that we do and the outreach regarding them. So we will again keep you updated. I think it's part of our plans moving into the next financial year on some of the key partners that we'll be working with in government and outside. Thank you, Chair.
On that note, I think there is no more questions, and let me take this opportunity to thank the board for responding to the invitation, and also acknowledge the challenges that you have. They are big. They are really big. I don't know. I don't want to say they need dedicated people, because dedicated people also will somehow or somewhere fail. But we appreciate that you've given us this information. Some of the information is new to us. We thank you for that, and also to the members. I thank all your for your presence in this meeting. We are going to continue. Our agenda does not end at the briefing. We've got two items also that we must deal with: the adoption of committee meetings and the consideration of committee evaluation report. I think we can allow the board to leave us.
I've just posted this little of these children in the autumn. So I need to, what's the school to buy our kids smartphones? but it has unintended consequences like this. Children have rights, but they have responsibilities too.
Daddy, I want an iPhone. And I'm going to treat myself to dinner by
thank you. Thank you.
I have it here.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. See, there's a debate on Minga 27 on child protection, working together to protect our children. I think this must also form part of the content of the debate.
When is that? 27
October.
Yes.
Yeah, it's OP. Plenary.
Next week.
Yeah. So it's not just a woman and children thing issue.
One tier. One tier.